Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, where we want to give you tips on staying healthy and even expose common myths about health and aging so you can enjoy a healthier and active life in the amazing South Sound. Brought to you by Dr. Jennifer Penrose, owner of Penrose & Associates Physical Therapy.
Welcome to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast. My name is Dr. Jennifer Penrose, and with me today is Dr. Leela Borders. Thanks so much for joining me today on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
She's recently joined Olympia Orthopedics, and she specializes in a couple different things, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So obesity and weight management, bone health, so the osteoporosis or soft bone, and then sports medicine as well. Mm-hmm. So today we'll be focusing on the obesity, and we'll see if we have time for other topics as that goes on. So for starters, just kind of give us a little bit of your background and why you even chose to go into being a doctor.
So this is kind of a long story. I have a very varied background. I've always been interested in science, but when I went to college, I was an English major. I focused in African-American women's literature. And I graduated in 2007 when the economy sort of tanked. So I wasn't exactly employable. So I got a job at a veterinary clinic and realized again that I did really like medicine. So I thought, well, maybe I'll go to med school. So I did. And then about halfway through med school, I was all gung-ho that I was going to be a primary care physician. And I finished med school and I went into internal medicine residency, which is a very busy specialty, and there's a lot of opportunities afterwards of different fellowships that you can do, or you can do a primary care, that kind of thing. And I realized that a lot of medicine was about fixing things that had gone wrong, which is fantastic, but I really kind of wanted to fix things before they happen. So I got into sports medicine a little bit because that was a little different patient population. It was a lot of problems that are easily fixable, and people were very active and they wanted to be healthy and they had a lot of buy-in for their care, which was great. And so, but I still wanted to do the preventative medicine part, and obesity is one of the things that is a huge preventative medicine issue. So I ended up finishing my fellowship in sports medicine and then starting work here, and then I got board certified in obesity medicine as well. So we
nice. Good
bit of a route to get here.
Yeah, it's always interesting how people end up where they are. Mm-hmm. The background, the backstory.
Yeah.
And where did you go to medical school?
I went to Mercer University. It's a small school in Georgia, which is where I'm originally from. I did my training in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is where I met my fiance. And then he was asked to come out here and interview for a job, and his practice, he said, well, I can't come without her. And so his practice approached our practice, and here I am. So
there you go.
So I'm very happy with where we've ended up.
Awesome. So why don't you talk a little bit more about the variety that you see over at Olympia Orthopedics and just kind of how you manage that within your practice now?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I see the sports medicine side of things is open to the community. Anyone that either has a referral from their primary care or comes into our rapid clinic or just comes in, calls up and says, you know, I have knee pain, and we see them. So that's a large part of my practice. I do a lot of work with athletes in the community. I'm trying to get more involved with that kind of thing. So I work with Tumwater High School. We work a little bit with Evergreen College, and I also work, we do all the events like the triathlon that's coming up, and all of those things kind of help out with those. So that part is a big part of what my practice is. And then the obesity management part really came about because to be a good surgical candidate for a total joint replacement, you really need to have a BMI under 40, and some studies show under 35. And that's really to reduce your risk of post-op complications and perioperative complications as well, and to prolong the life of that hardware that you're putting into this patient, because you want everyone to have a good outcome, right? So the practice kind of wanted to provide a little more service with that, because a lot of our population does have BMIs over 40. So that's kind of where I started doing the obesity management stuff. So I still get a little bit of community referrals from that as well, but most of that is coming from patients who are really trying to become better surgical candidates for their joints. So that's kind of where those come in.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's good that Olympia Orthopedics recognized there's a lot of people who they're not safe to really have the surgery yet. And that instead of just telling them you need to lose weight, now they have a way to help guide that process, that it's not quite as simple of just telling people, go figure that out on your own, come back when you can, that they're actually finding an avenue of like, all right, we have a way to help you navigate this.
Yeah, 100%. So I've really, you know, I think I'm making a good difference. I will say that a lot of my patients, once they start to lose weight, they actually feel much better and sometimes end up not even needing that joint replacement. So that, which I think is a good thing. And everybody kind of agrees with that. So that's good.
Yeah. No, I mean, on the physical therapy side, sometimes we'll get people in here and they have knee arthritis and they really are thinking they're going to have the replacement, but they've not, they really haven't done much in terms of activity. And once we get them moving and stretched and stronger and they see some weight come out, like a couple months later, it's like, you know what? I think I'm going to put that off a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So it is interesting that sometimes people don't always know that there's an option of potentially not having it done.
Exactly. So, and that's the goal, right? You want people to be as happy and healthy and able to do all the things that they want to do. So that's really my goal, is to make sure that people are able to do what they want to do. A lot of my patients, because I see arthritis patients as well who aren't ready for surgery just for any reason. And they ask, well, when do you think I'd be ready for surgery? Does my x-ray look that bad? And I say, well, we don't really treat your x-ray. We're going to treat your arthritis and how you feel. And if you're being limited by the pain that you're having and the conservative things that we've done aren't working, then surgery should be something we consider. But we need to know where you're at.
Right.
So what are you being limited by? And sometimes people aren't really being limited and they're not ready for surgery. And sometimes they are.
Yeah. Well, they do get caught up sometimes in their imaging, right? The diagnostic test, the x-ray, the MRI, and what have you. And it's often sometimes where we have to say, well, that's good information to have.
Right.
But really, is it, how is it impacting you? What can we do? What can we problem solve? And maybe even though your MRI looks awful or the x-ray looks awful, you're functioning okay, which always astounds them.
Yep.
But it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
It happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because we find things doesn't mean we have to treat them. I think that's...
Yeah, and that's a hard thing sometimes for people. And I think in this society and culture, you get really hung up on what does the test say? What does the diagnostic say? Well, what's your function?
Right.
What's your quality of life?
Exactly.
Yeah, those are better questions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the obesity statistics in the United States for adults versus children and BMI and what that means. So I'll let you kind of dive into that a little bit.
Absolutely. So most of the statistics are based on BMI, which is a measure of height and weight for the average individual. And it has its faults. It's not a 100% great measurement, you know. There's a lot of NFL players that would be considered morbidly obese that obviously are not, but it's kind of the best average measurement that we've got to use at the moment. So BMI over 25 is considered overweight, and over 30 is considered obese, which I think a lot of people don't really know that that's the case, and so they think that a BMI of 32 really isn't that bad, but really you're putting yourself at risk for a lot of medical complications with a BMI that high. But this is a society-wide thing. So 40% of adult Americans are obese, which is a BMI over 30, which is about 93 million people in our country. There's no state that has a prevalence of less than 20%. Washington would love to be one of those states that has a prevalence of 20%, but we're not. We are in the 25 to 30% range. With 19 or 18 other states. The only ones that are in the 20% range are Colorado and Hawaii. Everyone else is above that. So it's a pretty pervasive thing. And adolescents, 1 in 5 adolescents is considered obese now. Even down to elementary school children, there's 1 in 6. So it's really something that's becoming, and not becoming, it is a huge public health problem. And it's I also think that people don't understand the health consequences of being overweight and obese. And it's not just that, you know, we all understand that it puts you at higher risk for high blood pressure and for diabetes and things like that. But they don't see that there are, I want to say, 10 different kinds of cancer that are directly related to weight, including breast cancer, colon cancer, cervical cancer, esophageal cancer. All of these types of cancers are influenced by your weight.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's very, it affects every organ system in your body. It's the cause of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is the highest cause of cirrhosis in our country. So it's not the drinking that is causing people to need liver transplants as much anymore. Still not good. But
which I covered on my last podcast.
Exactly. But so, you know, don't go out drinking because I said that you ain't get liver disease. That's not the case. But,
right.
But, you know, these things all make a difference. It's been shown, it's been linked to things like stroke and dementia and all of these other health problems. And the biggest thing is that people don't realize that just a 5 to 10% loss of your body weight will decrease your risk of all of these things.
That's huge.
So, yeah, so we're not talking, you know, 150 pounds on every person. We're saying if you lose 20 pounds, that's a huge health benefit for you, which makes it a lot more reasonable for people when they're going forward trying to figure out, well, how much weight should I lose? Should I be, if I weigh 230 pounds now, and I'm 5 feet tall, should I be shooting for 130 pounds? In an ideal world, sure. In the real world, no. We need to work on getting you down just that 5 to 10% first to really give a good idea of how your health is going to benefit from this. So it's really rewarding and a little difficult to do. But I think once people understand that, it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah. I think it's something too, that's just people know when they are overweight, and they, many of the patients that I've worked with, they're in a situation where they're frustrated and they're depressed over it. They can't move as well because they have some sort of pain condition, and then they start putting on more weight, and it's like this vicious cycle that starts to happen. And there's also just like this, you know, it's not that simple of just each calorie is created equal. Right. And there's more involved than just, you know, simple calorie counting and move more.
Right.
And I feel like that's something that the medical profession as a whole has kind of let people down in the sense of like, okay, look, you just need to lose weight. Like you just need to get this under control. And so many people have got so frustrated. They try and they don't succeed. So let's kind of talk about some of those like problems and things that like how you're managing that with your patients and what you're seeing, because there's, it's more complicated than I think
very complicated.
We give credit to people. And I think that just, I ache for them when they tell me their story, and it's like, all right, we need to get this out there that it's not simple. It's not necessarily their fault.
Right.
So, I mean, if they're just sitting down and always having fast food and always having refined carbohydrates, okay.
Absolutely.
But I have so many people who will tell me I can only eat, you know, and they show me their hands. I can only eat this many blueberries and I'll still put on weight. And I'm like, you should not be limited by blueberries.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
That's healthy.
Exactly.
Right? So there's those stories that part is like, there's got to be, if the epidemic is that big, there's more to it.
Oh yeah. There's a ton more to it. So
let's let you dive into some of that.
So I'll give you the spiels that I give all of my patients. The first thing that I tell everyone after we do our initial exam is I say, you know, I'm an internist. I diagnose people with chronic diseases. Obesity is a chronic disease. And it is extremely important that people understand that, because it's just like diabetes and high blood pressure and all of these other diseases that people get and they get treated for, except for the fact that medicine has only just now started to try and figure out why people have this chronic disease, figure out how to treat it, and really even acknowledge that it is a chronic disease, you know? Like you were saying, for years and years and years, it's eat less, move more. And that is not the case with what is going on. So I always want my patients to understand that that's a big thing, and that it's not just their willpower of being able to not eat a cookie, that contributes to them being overweight and obese, or having obesity rather. So that's something that's really, that I'm really passionate about, and that I think is really important that everyone really understands that, because the mental health of people with obesity is really important. They have a 1.5 to 2-fold higher risk of major depression. In studies that they've done in children, children that are obese have the same quality of life as children with cancer, which is just crazy to think about, that these poor children are walking around with that kind of quality of life. So I think that there's a lot to it, more that medicine doesn't understand yet, that we'll talk about a little bit. So that's kind of how I approach it with people, because I want them to understand that willpower is not the end-all be-all of having obesity. That being said, so many things go into it, and medicine has done such a poor job of trying to figure out what goes into obesity that we don't have all of the tools that we need to have to be able to treat this effectively. And the problem is growing faster than we can do the research to help it. So I always sit down and I kind of go over the way that I approach patients. When you come and see me as a first-time patient, I have you fill out a packet. It's about 17 pages long. It really gets into, all of your past medical history, all of your mental health history, all of your medications, all of the way that you approach food, how you feel about your diet, how you feel about yourself, all of these things. And I sit down, I've already gone through that packet when the patient comes into my office, and we sit down and go through it again. And I ask them a lot of questions about things. And sometimes it ends up being, a 45-minute long visit, because we've gotten into some things that they've really needed to work on and talk about that aren't even related to their obesity. So it's a big packet. And we sit down, the first thing that I talk about with everyone is lifestyle, because that's a huge part of it. So a calorie is not a calorie, but at the same time, most people are overeating more than they realize.
Portions at restaurants,
it's insane.
I'm like, okay, can I divide this three ways?
Mm-hmm. It blows your mind, right? So I even, the other day, our office is right near here, and we were looking around for a place to have lunch, and a couple of my colleagues were like, oh, let's just order from this restaurant down the street. And just for fun, I pulled up their menu and they have a nutrition calculator on there. I'm not even joking. There was not a single thing on their menu less than 1,000 calories. Not a single thing. Not the salads. Not the burger, obviously, was not. Like, nothing. Literally nothing. I mean, their appetizers were like 1,200 calories. And I was like, there's nothing on here. There was a piece of salmon that was like 1,000 calories. And I was like, this is insane. Like, there's no way. But people don't realize that. And they sit down and they eat what seems like a healthy meal to them. They're getting a plate of salmon and a salad, and, they're minimally eating some French fries. And then all of a sudden they've eaten 1,200 calories. So we do talk about lifestyle, and we talk about different diets and things like that. We talk about activity. A lot of people get very concerned about the fact that they can't move as well as they did before. All of my patients can't do the physical activity that they want to be able to do, because they're all coming from an orthopedic surgeon to me. So they've obviously got some limitations. So I try to reassure people that exercise is obviously very important. It's not as important for the weight loss phase. It's much more important for weight maintenance, which is what studies have shown over time. So everyone has a different response to exercise. Some people lose weight, some people don't lose weight with exercise. So it's not as clear cut as putting someone on certain diets or medications or things like that. So I try to reassure people that we're going to get there, but it may take some time, and it's not the worst thing in the world if you can't do all the things that you want to do right this moment, because there are ways to lose weight without it, and we can work on that. So those are the first things that I talk about with people. I do go through all of their medications. Primary care doctors are fantastic, and we have so many medications that we can use to help people. A lot of those medications have side effects of weight gain that a lot of people don't know. The patient doesn't know, the practitioner doesn't know, because they're not common side effects of this medication, or they're on a medication that they really have to have that has this side effect of weight gain that we have to now counteract. So I go through their medications, and anything that we can adjust, anything that we can change to a different medication, things like that, I try to do either if it's something that I prescribe and I'm comfortable with, sometimes I'll change it myself, or I'll recommend that their primary care or their cardiologist or specialist, whoever prescribed that medicine, maybe change it to something different. So that's a big thing that we do. And then I do use medications as well that are specifically for obesity, because like I said before, it is a chronic disease. So I want to make sure that I am treating this fully and in all the possible ways that I can treat it. Not to bore you to death, but I can talk a little bit about, so people think that fat cells are just extra inert things on your body, and they 100% are not. So adipocytes produce all sorts of hormones. They produce cytokines. They produce all of these things that basically put your body in this low inflammatory state.
Right. The whole systemic inflammation thing that's been going a little more, I don't know, more people know about it.
Yes, exactly. So, and it makes a big difference in your overall health. You know, some of the benefit that our arthritis patients get from losing weight isn't just that they're taking pressure off the joints. It's that those adipocytes are not producing some of these inflammatory markers that are causing their arthritis to feel worse. So there's a lot of different things that go into this that people don't quite understand. And they don't understand how losing weight affects them too, and how hard it is. It's the biggest gland in your body. So if you think about it, like, we have, you know, we all know that skin is an organ, right? So everybody says, oh, your skin is the biggest organ in your body. Well, if you've got a gland that's producing hormones, you know, we think of our thyroid gland or our adrenal glands or any of these other glands in our body, all of our fat cells are one giant gland. And even on someone who doesn't have a lot of them, that's still a big gland. Like, yeah, that's a huge gland that's producing all of these hormones. And all of these hormones are affecting the way that you lose and gain weight as well. So it becomes an incredibly difficult thing. If that weren't bad enough to try to deal with that part of it, there's the whole part of your brain chemistry changes completely with weight gain and weight loss. So you have these reward pathways, which are ways that you think about food. You have all of these other things that go into what you eat, how you exercise, how your day goes about things. You know, that it's insane the amount of things that you're trying to counteract. And these poor patient is having to sit there and someone is just saying, oh, we'll just eat less and move more. Like, that's, there's a lot going on that they're having to deal with that they don't even know about. So, you know, we really have to take this big multimodal approach to things, which is one reason why I use some medications, because they affect some of the hormones and the brain pathways that go into how people gain weight and lose weight. Once you get into actually losing weight and you have to maintain that weight loss, then you get this whole other set of problems. Because your body doesn't like it when you lose weight. So it tries to keep that weight and bring that weight back. So it decreases your resting metabolic rate.
Right. That's the part that always threw me. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, so now we just decrease that, which then makes it even harder because you want mm-hmm. a faster metabolic rate, really. That's exactly. what you want.
Exactly. And even so when they look at, everybody knows what The Biggest Loser is, and they studied these people after the show was
over. They gain it all back.
And their resting metabolic rates did not go back up. They stayed at the lower level from when they lost the weight.
So it's like suppressed and then stay suppressed.
Yep. So then once you start gaining that weight back, you still are, I mean, you're predisposed to gain it even faster and even more.
Which is why people, like, I know people in my own mm-hmm. life where they, you've seen them lose the weight and you're like, oh, yay, great job, you look great. And then all of a sudden it creeps back, but it creeps back even more yep. so.
Exactly.
And almost quicker. Mm-hmm. And then you watch them go through this whole cycle over and over again. Mm-hmm. But each time they gain, it's even more.
Right.
And exactly. That's the part where I've always been like, there's something just not right. Like, I know that yep. they're trying because mm-hmm. you keep seeing them try.
Exactly. There's so, a yes. lot to it. Yeah. And I wish, I tell people all the time, my patients all the time that you know, I feel like a neurologist sometimes who can diagnose a disease, but can't quite treat it all the way. You know, we can all diagnose Alzheimer's and dementia, but we don't have really great treatments for that, right? So I can tell you that you have obesity, and I can give you a lot of tools to try and help, but I don't have a magic wand. I do, but it only works at Universal Studios. And even then I was not good with it. So, you know,
that was fun, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun there. It is fun. But yeah, it's definitely.
So how do people really try to get that metabolic rate to rise and stay high? Like, is there
a not way? That I've found. I am still right. looking. We are all still learning in this game. So we, you know, I still learn every day new things. But I have not found a great way to do that, which is one reason why I typically try and help people lose weight in a very slow fashion, because I want to give them a lifestyle that they can follow as opposed to a diet that's going to help them lose a bunch of weight very quickly. And then they have to figure out how to keep that off, which is then even more difficult to do. So there are some patients that I will do more aggressive treatment with who qualify for that. Not everyone qualifies for that. And I don't think personally that that's the best way to go about losing a lot of weight, because I do think that you need that lifestyle to be able to maintain that. There's a lot to it.
Yeah, it's definitely more complex than I think most people really mm-hmm. recognize. Even me as a provider, the more I dive yeah. into it, the more I'm blown away mm-hmm. that it is more of a disease, and right. it is very complex. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that's fascinated me is just all the genetic component mm-hmm. to it now. Like, we know, you were saying, how many genes are related to weight?
I was looking this up the other day, and I found one study that said up to 97, and then one that said almost 300 loci of genetic markers that either are associated with or lead to obesity. And the only chromosome that we've found that doesn't have anything on it is the Y chromosome. You guys get everything right?
Right.
So that's...
But that doesn't make them immune from weight loss.
No. Or weight issues. They do. So, you know, this is a compounded part. So some studies that you'll even read when we were studying for our boards, you learned that about 70% of obesity is genetic related in some form or fashion, which is just kind of mind baffling, because again, how am I supposed to treat something genetic with eat less and work more? Mm-hmm. Right. So, that's definitely a big part of it. It's a part that we haven't really learned everything that we need to know about it yet. So there are, I know you were talking about, there are some genetic tests to see if you have these markers. I don't personally do any in the office because they're very expensive, and I don't have a good, it's not going to change my management.
Sure.
But I'm not opposed to doing them. I just don't have the tools to do them with the way that we are right now in medicine.
Sure.
So...
Yeah, there's a company, Nutrimetrics has some gene SNP testing, and they only test, I think it's 22 genes and their variations associated with weight, hormones, and energy. And they fully acknowledge, I agree, there's no amount of food or exercise that will physically alter mm-hmm. our genes. But, you know, knowing what if you have those markers, it gives you a little more power and knowledge of what nutritional support and lifestyle mm-hmm. changes, you can optimize the function of the gene mm-hmm. variations, but you can't completely change them. But it is interesting to kind of know, all right, I mean, like, I was fascinated, you know, I read a little bit on their genes online of like FAIM2. This gene is associated with energy storage and increased risk of obesity, hyperlipidemia, and endothelial dysfunction. And I just thought, mm-hmm. you know, okay, so you get these markers, and then the test kind of goes through at least some recommendations. So mm-hmm. it gives people at least something.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, definitely people need to be aware of gene testing and the you know, be careful with where you get it done and how the lab takes your information. So the 23andMe, like, they do sell your information. That part, when I learned that, I was like, okay, like, how do
it's
they?
A little, yep.
It's a little risky. So yep. How does the lab get your information? How do they, you know, do they just give you a code instead of your name right. being changed, you know, exchanged?
Right.
Anyway, it's just an interesting era, I think, in the last 5 years where all this genetic, you know, the ancestry.com and all, there's just a lot more, which is great.
Yep.
But I really am excited to see the medical profession try to use that better. And, yeah. and it sounds like it's becoming more available.
It's becoming more available. In medicine, everything that we do is based on, can we fix something, right? So we need to know these genetic markers, but we need to know them in order to be able to find a way to use them to help the problem.
Right.
Right. So, and that's where research is going. You know, some of the research that's being done in obesity is fascinating. There are all kinds of genetic things that are happening that are going to be great. There's a lot of different things that are going to come around. We just don't have a lot right now, which is unfortunate.
Up and coming.
Up and coming, exactly. To be determined.
Right.
But yeah, there's all kinds of, one of my most fascinating, or something that I'm fascinated with, is that the gut microbiome in patients with obesity is markedly different than patients without. There are very specific bacteria that they have that other people don't have. So they actually, there's some studies in Boston, they have the fecal transplant center and they have the stool storage. I forget, they have an actual scientific name for it, but it's basically the poop locker in Boston. And they are working on fecal transplants for patients with obesity that help them lose weight, which is just insanely fascinating. Fecal transplants are not as disgusting as they sound. We do them for things like C. diff, patients that have chronic diarrhea from bacteria and things like that. They are a fairly common treatment at certain centers. So there's something that we utilize all the time for other things, but it's fascinating to think that we could do that for obesity, that someone could ultimately just take a pill that changes their gut microbiome that helps them lose weight and maintain that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? That sounds like, that sounds right. That's right. The magic wand that we want, right? we right. can't find yet.
right. I mean, granted, it wouldn't be the only thing. They'd still right. have to do the lifestyle and
exactly.
the making good food choices, but mm-hmm. that would be, you know, the gut biome is huge mm-hmm. in terms of overall health.
Exactly.
And especially if that is linked with the obesity, that would be really, mm-hmm. really fascinating.
Yeah, it is extremely... we talk about it a lot in our household because my fiancé is a gastroenterologist. So there's a lot of discussion at the dinner table about feces and how we can use it to make things better in our lives. But and about weight loss because he specializes in liver disease and he does a lot of treatment of these things. So we collaborate a lot in how to help patients.
What else in terms of when you manage these patients, you kind of talked about that first initial mm-hmm. visit and they become, because it is a more of a chronic disease, they become mm-hmm. lifelong patients, right? Like
that's not, the goal.
That they're not, it's not one of those, I think in my mind, I guess, and maybe that's probably just the perception maybe mm-hmm. other people have too, is that they're only coming a few times, but it really is more of a management long term.
Right. Exactly. So my goal is to see people help them manage this throughout their life. So the first thing I do is I have everyone keep track of everything that they're eating and drinking for about a week or two, and then I bring them immediately back. So I see them their first initial visit, and then I see them again a week or two later. And we go through their lifestyle and what their day looks like and how they've been eating. And we make small changes. I'm a big fan of the small changes. If you told my fiance that he had to eat vegetables every day, he would starve to death. Like, people can't just change the way that they eat on a dime. Some people can. Nobody maintains that. Okay. You can tell me not to eat cookies. And I can guarantee you I'll do fantastic for a month. And then a month later, I'm going to mainline a bag of Oreos. And that's going to be the end of that. But so, you know, I don't want people to come to me and for me to just completely tell them that they need everything in their life to change. Even if that's the case, there are some people that bring me their diet booklets and I say, oh, okay, we've got a lot of work to do. But most people have some healthy habits that they just need cultivated a little bit more. And they need a little bit more support in how to avoid the more unhealthy things that they're doing. So I typically, if people are very interested in a certain diet, I will talk to them about it. We can go through what's healthy about it, what's not so healthy about it, and how to incorporate that into their life. And if they're really gung-ho and really trying something and it's working for them, that is fantastic. And we will keep going down that route. But most of the time I try to use a more, hey, let's try and cut back on these sodas that you're drinking, or let's try and change this food out for this other food and things like that. And it works for the most part for a lot of people. I think people don't realize how much small changes can make in your life. Even just cutting out sodas is the most incredible thing weight loss wise. Cutting out alcohol is a huge, huge thing. You know, we all like to drink a glass of wine. I think I read some crazy statistic the other day. I think that was almost every American, that the drinking has increased throughout time so that almost everyone imbibes alcoholic beverages now, which is great. I like wine. But at the same time, that's a huge caloric expense. Alcohol is in its own little category as far as how many calories per gram. So, you know, it's its own special thing. So even just cutting back on those little things people don't realize can make a huge difference in their overall health and their overall weight. So we start kind of with that kind of thing. And then I see people back depending on what they need support-wise. I can follow some people once a week if that's how tightly they need to just come and see me. I typically try and do about once a month for the first few months while we're making bigger changes and then sort of space them out as we go along. So ultimately, the goal would be that you would lose the goal amount of weight that you'd like to lose. And then I'd see you about once every 6 months up to once a year afterwards to help maintain that. But I've only been here for a year, so we're not right to that point with anyone yet, but that's the goal.
Yeah.
So.
And then in terms of like, if they are wanting to get a joint replacement, mm-hmm. do they, you just keep following up and then at some point when they reach that goal, they can then go have that mm-hmm. if they still...
Absolutely. If they still need that and that's what they want to do, that is 100%. I work, all the surgeons know what I'm doing dietary-wise with the patients. So if they're on, like I said earlier, we do, in some patients, I do a meal replacement program, which is the shakes and bars, and that's all you eat for a certain amount of time. And then you kind of go back into a regular lifestyle. If that's your need, I will do that. And in those cases, if you're going to surgery, the surgeon needs to know that so that I can make sure that we have all the appropriate labs and make sure that they're safe for surgery and all of those things, because those kinds of diets do need to be medically supervised because they can really affect your electrolytes and the rest of your body. So, and like I said, I use those pretty sparingly, but for some people they are appropriate.
So touch on the whole, I don't know if you want to call it a fad, but it seems like everyone knows about fasting, intermittent fasting, and how to utilize that. And, you know,
absolutely.
Probably some people use it more than others, but
Go ahead. So there's a lot of different diets out there, and intermittent fasting is one of them. There's a big book called The Obesity Code that came out a little bit ago that's published by a nephrologist who's very smart. So the idea of intermittent fasting is that you give your body a break from any kind of caloric intake for X amount of time. So for some, depending on the diet, it can be an entire day, it can be a week, it can be just a few hours a day. Just depends on what approach you're taking. So the biggest issue with looking at studies for this is that no one has a standardized approach. So all the studies that are looking at it are very small and they're looking at different approaches. So when you look at what's called a meta-analysis, so where they go through and they look at all these controlled trials that have been done with this particular diet, they're pulling all these studies and none of them are exactly the same. So it's difficult to compare them. And they're very small studies. So some studies show that it works pretty well. Some studies show no difference between that and what we call an continuous energy restricted diet. So that would be like a lower calorie diet. So I think that I'm a big fan when it comes to medicine of, if it's not hurting you and it's working for you, go for it. So there's a lot of studies that show that glucosamine doesn't really do anything for joints. but there are also a lot of studies that show that it's pretty safe to take. So if it's working for you, I say go for it. Same thing with intermittent fasting. If it's working for you, fantastic. That is absolutely great. It makes perfect medical pathophysiologic sense to me. We just don't have the randomized controlled trials to show 100% that yes, this is working. So that's my take on those kinds of things. I think that there's a lot of things that we have really good evidence are harmful, like ephedra. You're definitely going to lose weight, but that's not a good drug to be on. So I think as long as we know that it's not hurting you, then I'm okay with these things. Right. So.
Well, I think isn't the whole idea kind of behind it, the Dr. Jason mm-hmm. Fung was the one that wrote that book, The Obesity mm-hmm. Code. And I thought the whole, at least idea that I understood is you're trying to get your body in a state to actually burn fat.
Exactly.
And it takes a while mm-hmm. for that switch to actually happen, to go mm-hmm. get, you know, to get yourself to burn those fat cells.
Right.
Right. To utilize that as your energy source instead of relying right. on what you're putting in your body every day.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. And I think that it's hard when we're just, our culture is very, we're just very wrapped up in food. I mean, if mm-hmm. fasting doesn't, we just really don't have that. It doesn't work well in this yeah. society very well.
No.
So it's one of those like, all right, I get it that back in the day when we'd have to right. go hunt.
Exactly. Gather,
there'd be days of fasting.
Yep.
And there'd be days of
exactly.
know, feasting. And so it's one of those like, yeah, we don't really, it's a hard thing. I right. mean, so it's one of those where I'm like, I think that's what he was getting at is trying to burn, get your body to switch.
Exactly.
And I don't know how else you get yourself to use those fat cells.
Right. So you can do it with some, so that's the idea behind some of the meal replacement programs actually, is that you are ingesting so few carbohydrates that your body is using all of the glucose stores that it has, and then eventually it switches to ketones. So that's what you're looking for, is that your body is burning ketones and your brain is using that for fuel. So you can do it in other diets as well.
Like the ketosis diet, like people who
exactly, right, exactly. So they're, you know, they're good diets. I think that if you look at all of the research behind everything, pretty much every diet does the same weight loss wise. So you can put someone on a low fat diet, you can put someone on a low carbohydrate diet, you can put someone on a keto diet, which is more of a high fat diet, mm-hmm. and everyone's going to lose weight that you put on these diets. Pretty much at the same rate, there's some differences in overall, but pretty much everyone's going to lose weight. It's more of a maintaining and which diet works for that particular
for
person.
For the long haul, and for that long person. Haul.
Yeah. And if you look at the data, really the Mediterranean diet is the one that's got the most robust data behind it for maintenance, for overall health, and all that jazz. So that's usually when I'm working with patients, a lot of times I will put them on more of a high protein diet, which is very different than the traditional American diet, which is a very high carbohydrate diet. And you kind of have to have some conversations too about what is a good carbohydrate, because people will restrict all vegetables and all fruits and all of these things, and because they're all carbohydrates. So you have to kind of remind people that no, we're restricting more breads and more things like cereals and pastas. Yeah, exactly. But in the long haul, getting someone on more of a Mediterranean diet really helps for the long distance weight loss and weight maintenance.
And do you think that the reason our culture just doesn't, we don't take the time to do food prep, and we don't always want to run to the store every day to get fresh mm-hmm. produce.
Exactly.
And I think that's my own issue, mm-hmm. which I assume is somewhat.
It's universal.
Yeah.
It's 100% universal.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So one of the things, so when you start to look into the way that people eat, convenience is the biggest thing, right? So, yeah, everyone.
I'll pay more for convenience.
Right, exactly. So that's why we have this huge, you know, you walk into Walmart and there's an entire aisle of protein bars, right? And I am all for a good protein bar. Like, that is the most convenient, wonderful thing. But that's why it's there, is because we need convenient things. There, you know, a dinner where you've made this expertly prepared piece of fish and you've got four vegetables with it and it's fantastic is obviously way more healthy for you and way better for weight loss than a protein bar. But I cooked dinner once last week. I'm not sure how many times you cooked last week. And I love to cook. I really enjoy it. And I still didn't get to cook, but one day, you know. So convenience is a big deal. And I think encouraging people and telling them that, hey, you know, it's okay. Here are some convenient foods that are going to work a little bit better for you than what you're eating now. Because there's a lot, there's good convenient foods and there's bad convenient foods, right? I'd much rather you have a salad from McDonald's than the chicken fingers from Popeyes. I love the chicken fingers from Popeyes, but they're not the best out of those choices. So it's really more about making those different choices during the day, not necessarily cutting out all your convenience foods and trying to eat less processed foods and things like that. All helpful in the end, but we got to be realistic, right? And the other thing that, this is my other little soapbox, it is incredibly difficult to eat healthy on any kind of budget. So one of the things that a lot of my patients have issues with is that they can't afford the healthier foods. If you go to the grocery store, it is so much cheaper to buy these processed foods. McDonald's is so much cheaper than even going to the grocery store.
It has no nutrient value, though.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the part that I, like when I drive by there, I'm like, yep, there's no exactly. nutrition at all in that.
Yeah. And it's very difficult. And so, and you get these, our entire society is geared towards being able to eat healthier if you can afford it, which is really unfortunate. And you can even look, if you look at food maps and things like that, poor sections of communities, so in big cities, big urban downtowns and things like that, where the poor socioeconomic classes tend to live, they do not build grocery stores in those areas. So those people are buying food from convenience stores or whatever's in the neighborhood. And it's very difficult to eat healthy if the only place that you have to buy food is the gas station down the street, right? Mm-hmm. And the milk is $4 for a thing of milk. That's not sustainable for people. And it's the same thing when my patients come in and they try to say, you know, I'd like to eat more vegetables and things like that. But A, they're extremely expensive. B, I don't have a place to store them. You know, maybe they don't have refrigeration. Maybe they don't have these options. I don't have a place to cook them or a means to cook them. So it's really difficult to kind of talk people through the different options. And Olympia is fantastic for trying to eat a little bit healthier. You know, our farmer's market downtown is wonderful and they accept, it's affordable. They accept EBT. There's, you know, all of the places there. Really, you can get a lot of fresh and healthy food for decent prices. Imperfect Produce is a company that does ugly produce. they deliver to Olympia. I get it every week. And you get a box on your doorstep of fresh produce that otherwise would have gone in the garbage and things like that. So there are ways to find good, nutritious foods for a better price, but people don't know that. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to find those resources if you don't know enough about them. So that's kind of one of my other soapboxes is we need to be doing more as a society to make that kind of thing
known
and just reachable for people. Like they need to know that you can go and get something healthy from the store that's easy and convenient that isn't a non-nutritional item from your local Taco Bell. Like, Again, love Taco Bell like the rest of the world, but like not the best, right?
Right.
So
what cookbook do you recommend?
I brought it.
I know. I saw it. I'm like, what'd you bring?
So this is my, well, I like a lot of cookbooks. This one is The Mediterranean Family Table, and it's by Angelo Acquista, MD. And he is fantastic. He's from Italy, I believe. And he grew up eating this diet. And it goes into the science behind it at the beginning in a very approachable way. And it talks to people about what kinds of things you should get in your refrigerator and in your cabinet and what kinds of things you want to stick with eating and what kinds of things you want to not. And it takes you all the way through life from infanthood all the way into seniorhood. So it's a really great book. It's got some really good recipes in it. That's what I recommend for a lot of people. I think that there's a lot of good cookbooks out there, but people don't know that they're out there. So I love recipes. I tell people all the time to look online at different things, but to be careful of some of the things that you see online, because all of these tasty recipes and things like that, they're fantastic, but they're also, most of them call for like an entire stick of butter and things like that. So there's reasons that they're fantastic.
Do you have a favorite website for recipes?
Honestly, I get a ton of recipes off the American Diabetes Association website. They have great low carbohydrate options that are just really good for people. So I do steer people towards things like that. But yeah.
That'll be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. So yeah, there's a lot of information out there. And I think that's one of the more difficult parts of my job and is kind of narrowing down things for people. Because you go online and you see 8,000 different ways to do something. And you don't know which way is right. You know, everyone says this diet's better or this diet's better or eat a banana or don't eat a banana and don't eat this and do eat this. And there's so much information that my poor patients come in. They're like, I don't know what to do anymore. Like, what am I supposed to be eating? I'm like, well, let's start with what you are already eating and let's see what we can change with that to make it a little bit more healthy. And that's usually where I start with people.
Yeah. A little more practical. Let's start where you are. Yeah. Let's see where you want to go, find mm-hmm. the gap, and then just make small steps toward that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah. More.
Yeah. Successful that way.
I do find that people are a little more successful that way. And they feel like they're doing something that they can sustain as opposed to feeling deprived from eating.
Right.
So. Yeah. Because we all eat for pleasure.
Yes.
Nobody wants to be deprived.
No.
Of something.
No.
Mm-mm. So.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come right back.
And now for a special announcement from Stay Healthy South Sound. On Wednesday, July 10th at 6 p.m., Stay Healthy South Sound will be performing a free workshop on walking with urban trekking poles at Capitol Lake. You can RSVP at info@penrosept.com. That's info@penrosept.com. Please bring your own trekking poles or let us know that you need them in your RSVP, and we'll provide you with some resources on where you can find them. We look forward to seeing you on Wednesday, July 10th at 6 p.m. at Capitol Lake for the Trekking Pole Workshop. And now, back to the show.
Okay, so we are back, and we want to kind of dive into just a little bit of what patients are appropriate for you in terms of the weight management part and when to refer to you versus a dietitian.
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely. So most of my patients are internal referrals from the surgeons. However, I do take referrals from primary care providers and people in the community. So the best patient to really come and see me is someone who has obesity, who has tried some other interventions before, and who also has other medical problems. So it's really useful for patients when they come to me if they have diabetes or if they have high blood pressure or things like that, because those are things that we can work on with the obesity. A lot of the medications that we use are targeted towards diabetic patients, so that it becomes a little bit easier to prescribe those medications for them and things like that. Your average person who needs help with nutrition and diet but is overall fairly healthy otherwise probably would do a little better with a nutritionist or a dietitian who can delve into sort of the everyday, this is exactly what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat. I'm more of a big picture kind of person. So there are patients who do better with someone who can really sit down and delve into the micronutrients versus the macronutrients and things like that in someone's diet. And those people, I think a dietitian is or a nutritionist is more appropriate. And I have patients that need that as well. So I still
refer.
To,
yeah. Exactly. If they really want that on top of the piece that you're handling, they'll often do both.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I find that people do really well for the most part. So I have a very rewarding job.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Love that. Mm-hmm. I think it's great to just let people know that they're not alone in this and they don't have to figure it out alone and that it's not as simple as maybe the medical community was communicating in the past.
Yes. I think we are rapidly catching up to what we need to be knowing about obesity and how to treat it. But I think we definitely lagged behind. We saw all of the diseases that are caused by obesity, but we never really treated the underlying problem, which is the weight gain and the obesity. So I think that's definitely something that we are catching up to. And yeah, and it's helpful to have, I think my role as a specialist in obesity is nice purely because some people need that extra time. And our primary care providers are already doing so much for people that sometimes it can be very difficult to find that extra time to talk about the lifestyle and what they need to be doing. And so I think that that's where some of my colleagues who have asked me, you know, if they can refer patients and things are looking to get a little extra help with that, which is where I come in. Because I could not, the primary care doctors are doing way more than I possibly could ever think to do as a doctor. So I think anything that we can do to help them provide better care too is helpful.
Yeah. There's so much that they have to cover.
Exactly.
That I wouldn't, that to dive deeper into some of this needs some other person to jump into that scene.
Yeah.
So let's wrap up a little bit.
Sure.
So what is your favorite restaurant so far in the South Sound since you haven't been here too long?
But. Exactly. So I love to eat is the caveat to this. And we eat a lot. So I really, my fiance loves Water Street Cafe. So we go there quite frequently. I really like Swing. They have great appetizers and obviously wine. Cascadia Grill downtown is fantastic too. I think that's a little hidden gem. And then the Navaya food truck at the corner of Plum and 4th or 5th, one of those. There's like the...
One way.
Yeah, there's like a little food truck park right there. Yes. And my fiance would eat that every day if he possibly could. So they're fantastic.
It's funny. Mm-hmm. What's on your bucket list, which might be a little longer at this point?
Yeah, my bucket list
is what is it that you want to go around here?
Yeah, so we have not done the touristy whale watching trip. So my fiance's mother actually just bought us, as a birthday present for me, bought us a trip to go look at whales. So
fun.
Get to go do that up at the, out of Port Townsend, I think is where we're going. But
that's a fun town.
So it should be really fun. So we are actively trying to explore more in Olympia and the surrounding areas. So
awesome.
Yeah.
And then what is your best tip for people to stay healthy and fit around here?
Get outside. Just doing anything. I try to tell my patients all the time, you know, even if all you can do is walk for 5 minutes, walk for 5 minutes. If all you can do is walk up the stairs in your house, walk up the stairs in your house. Like,
Start somewhere
and just get up and do something.
Right. So I find myself telling people all the time, like, okay, well, one, you know, you were able to walk 30 minutes in the past. Right now you can do 5 minutes. Why don't you do 5 minutes 3 to 4 times a day? Like, break it up.
Yeah.
Like, that still counts. Like, at the end of the day.
100% that still counts. You're supposed to be doing, they change these recommendations all the time, but like 150 minutes a week, I think, of exercise. And that's over the week. So you can split that up. You don't have to do 2.5 hours of activity in, you know, one go.
Right.
Yeah, just getting up and getting outside. Your sunshine is fantastic here. So,
and you have to make friends with the rain here. Like, you just have to at some point.
I'm working on it. I have like a full rain suit. So I look just crazy walking around. I have like rain boots and rain pants and a rain jacket. And I have like, you know, basically all you can see is my eyes. So I'm still getting used to it.
Right. Yeah, we keep REI funded. Well,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go make friends with the rain, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so thanks so much for coming and talking today. And where can people find out more about you? So maybe list like website.
Sure. So our website is olyortho.com. That all of our information on there, mine and my other colleagues who are providers.
In your location, you're at the Hawks Prairie.
Yes, I practice out of the Hawks Prairie location, which is right across the street. It's on Galaxy, off of Galaxy Drive on Freedom Lane, I believe is the name of it.
All right.
Right next to the Ram Restaurant.
It's a growing area.
It is a growing area. I really like it out here.
Well, great. Thanks so much for coming again.
Thank you for having me.
Yay.
Thank you for listening to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, brought to you by Penrose & Associates Physical Therapy. If you want some free tips to implement right away on various problems like knee pain, back pain, running injuries, and many more issues, then jump on over to penrosept.com and download the free report that fits your needs. You will receive helpful tips right away and have the choice to email in for further questions and set up a free phone consultation. You can reach us at 360-456-1444 and info@penrosept.com. You can stay connected with us at stayhealthysouthsound.com and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast. This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.